Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, June the 7th, and welcome to our commentary. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about these caravans. There's a new caravan in Mexico forming up and headed to the United States, and I have a post about this over at the American Thinker. Why is Mexico tolerating this? And there's also a related story that broke last night, early this morning, that the president of Mexico is not going to attend the so-called summit of the Americas. This is I think they do this once a year or maybe every few years, where all the leaders of Latin America get together and they do sort of it's like a United Nations session, if you will, but it's for Latin American countries. And the president of Mexico is not going. He has told President Biden he's not going. Now, he's saying the official explanation is that he's not going because President Biden did not invite Cuba and Venezuela. That's the official position of the president of Mexico. But I have a feeling that there's more to this than that. I just don't think that's the reason. I think that the president of Mexico right now is under a lot of stress in Mexico because of the economy. Also, I believe he knows that, or he wants to negotiate, I think, somehow, something with the United States. And this sort of ties in to the caravans. These caravans are forming in the south of Mexico, and they're heading north. Now, most of the people in the caravans are not even Mexicans. The overwhelming majority of them are not Mexicans. They're from different countries who have decided to march through Mexico. And given the past history of Mexico, we know that Mexico can stop them. If Mexico really wanted to stop the caravans, they could shut them down in a heartbeat. They would simply put the army on the border, or they would simply pick up these people and send them back to wherever they came from. Mexico can do that. But for some reason, Mexico is not doing that. They're letting these caravans through. And I think I see it as a way of, I think López Obrador, the president of Mexico, wants to negotiate something with the United States regarding immigration. And I think he is using this card to do that. Now, I hope President Biden doesn't fall for it. I hope that President Biden actually takes a very tough position against President López Obrador, because we shouldn't be negotiating these caravans with Mexico. First of all, they're not even Mexicans, as I said before. You know, these are people who are going through Mexico. And who is helping these people? Where are they getting the money? What, you know, criminal element may be involved in this? It's just completely wrong. But yet, the president of Mexico is not doing anything about it, and I think he should. I think he should, and I think we should put pressure on Mexico. Now, under the Trump administration, I thought President Trump had found the perfect solution, temporary nevertheless, but a good solution to the problem, and that's remain in Mexico, where they had to remain in Mexico until the asylum process was finished. And the mere fact that they had to stay in Mexico discouraged a lot of them from coming to the United States. Now, unfortunately, when President Biden came in, one of the first things he did was to cancel the stay in Mexico policy and replace it with what we have right now, which is total complete chaos, total complete chaos on the border. And it's going to be very tense, I think, when Mexico, the president of Mexico and the president of the United States talk on the phone the next time. They're not going to meet in person, as I said, because he's not coming. This is also, by the way, a real blow to Vice President Harris, who I think has been given the responsibility of the border, and she has simply not taken it very seriously. And I think that this is also a big blow to Vice President Harris, who I believe is going to be at the conference. I think she's going to be there. But without Mexico, look, if Mexico doesn't come to the summit of the Americas, this is not a very, honestly, not a very productive session, because Mexico is right now the most important country when it comes to this immigration situation. So we'll try to stay in touch with this because I think it's a real slap in the face, frankly, of President Biden. It's right in your face, President Biden. That's what I think this is. And at a time when, frankly, I think President Biden doesn't need any more slaps in the face. He's got plenty right here in the United States. So the president of Mexico, I think, is showing no respect for President Biden. And that doesn't surprise me, but that is what we're seeing down there. Now, today, June the 7th, there are going to be some big primaries in California. Now, most of these primaries are going to be in the Democrat side because, as you know, the Republicans are not much of a factor in California. But there are some interesting primaries for the mayor of L.A. There's a district attorney in San Francisco who is under a recall, I think also one in L.A. And there are some, you know, you hear some experts talking about the situation in California and how the collapse, the total collapse of law and order in cities like L.A. and San Francisco, and just the situation with homelessness in L.A., people are just fed up with it. People are just fed up with it, and they're blaming the Democrats. So what you may see in California is Democrats, the Democrats who win these primaries are going to be a little bit more of the type who wants to be tougher on crime than the ones there right now. Again, it's all going to be Democrats. I don't think the Republicans are going to have much of a good day because they just don't have the numbers. Now, there are some good Republicans running in California. There's our friend Barry Jacobson, who's running for the state house. I hope he wins. And there are others who are running but they have this thing called a jungle primary where everybody runs together. And I think the first two go to the election in November. So most of the time, the first two, of course, are Democrats. And so that's what will probably happen. What we're hoping for, though, for the sake of the people in California, is that the law and order Democrats at least make it to the finals so they can make their case to the people of California about this total, complete lawlessness that has simply collapsed, you know, cities like San Francisco and L.A., which, you know, used to be great cities, and now, unfortunately, they are not. There is something weird about the Biden White House, and I'm sure that's not a shock to you if you've been listening to some of my commentaries before, but in 2021, the Biden White House did not issue a statement about D-Day. Now, that's a shock to me. I had forgotten about that, but that was a complete shock. How in the world do you forget D-Day? Well, this year they finally did, and they did it at 8:45 p.m. 8:45 p.m., they issued a tweet or something honoring D-Day. So you have to sit there and ask yourself, what is going on in this White House? And frankly, what is going on with President Biden? You would think a man of his generation, I mean, he was, I think, born in 1941 or something like that. So he grew up as a child, like so many people back then in the 40s and 50s, hearing about World War II. Most of the people back then had a family member or a neighbor or somebody in the neighborhood or somebody who was related to World War II. So he grew up with that. So you would think that D-Day was something that he grew up with, you know, and you would think that the first thing he would do on D-Day, the morning of D-Day, is when he gets to the Oval Office, the first thing he would say to the people there saying, okay, where's my statement about D-Day? Who's going to write my statement about D-Day? Apparently, nobody did. And it wasn't until 8:45 in the p.m. in the evening that they decided to put something out. To me, this is unbelievable. I mean, it's just completely unbelievable. This is not, I mean, this, the question you have to ask yourself is, number one, did President Biden forget D-Day? I mean, did he not realize that he's the president of the United States and he gets to read or make an announcement about D-Day? Did he forget that? It's just unbelievable to me that something like that would happen. And then, of course, the staff. What is going on with his staff that they would forget, you know, D-Day? You just don't forget something like that. Especially, I mean, even D-Day is 78 years old, I know, and there are a few veterans remaining, less than, I think, 10,000 at the moment. I had a friend Bob Jaggers, who I mentioned yesterday in my video about D-Day, you know. So D-Day was close to me because I'm a history fan, but also because I knew people like Bob Jaggers, with whom I talk about D-Day. But just about everybody in the country knows someone who directly or indirectly had contacts to World War II. And for Joe Biden or his staff to forget this, it's just unbelievable. I have no idea how this could happen. I mean, I'm sitting here going, my goodness, how does this happen? How does this happen? How do they forget to issue a statement on D-Day? I mean, they should have done that at 9 o'clock in the morning. But no, they finally do it at 8:45 p.m., probably more out of embarrassment than anything else. So I have no idea what's going on in this White House, but it really worries me. It really worries me when the President of the United States doesn't know that it's D-Day, or nobody around him tells him that it's D-Day. I don't know. There's something super, super strange. Let me say happy number 82 to Tom Jones, the great singer. Now, when I think of Tom Jones, I think of a television show that he had on Thursday nights. It was Engelbert Humperdinck had a show, and then Tom Jones had another show on the same night. As I recall, I think they were both on the ABC network. So at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, it was Tom Jones, and then the later show was Engelbert Humperdinck. And all that I remember is all the women in our neighborhood wanted to watch Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck. So that's what I remember about Tom Jones, who's 82 today. Of course, he did have one big song he had many, many big songs. But the one that I remember is What's New Pussycat. That's the one that I remember, a very catchy song from that time. So happy number 82 to Tom Jones. Also something on this day in history, very interesting. On this day in 1976, somebody published an article in New York. I don't remember what magazine. It may have been New Yorker magazine. Somebody wrote an article about these young people who would go out dancing on Saturday night. And it was a group of youngsters in New York who every Saturday night would get all dressed up and go dancing in different places in New York City. And this article was written, you know, many people talked about it. And it ended up in the hands of the manager of the Bee Gees. And the manager of the Bee Gees, Mr. Stigwood, I can't think of his name right now, but the last name is Stigwood. And he was a very smart entrepreneurial kind of guy who knew how to make money. And he read the article and he put together, I guess, a committee of people and said, maybe we can make a movie out of this. And that's how Saturday Night Fever happened. And then, of course, Saturday Night Fever, the movie, was combined with music that the Bee Gees were working on at the time. The Bee Gees didn't even know that these songs were going to be for a movie. They didn't even know what the movie was about. They just contributed the songs. But anyway, it became the best-selling soundtrack of all time. The movie, well, you know the success of the movie. It became the biggest movie of 1978, and it changed the country in so many ways, the dancing music, the discotheques. And it became kind of the thing to do, I guess, in the late 70s. Eventually, disco faded because it was too much saturation. It was too much disco. I mean, every time you turn on the radio, it was disco, disco, disco. After a while, people just said, okay, enough disco. So it saturated. It kind of went out of style. But for a while there, it was really big. And it all started, this is incredible to me, it started when somebody wrote an article in 1976. On this day, he published it. And it was about a group of young people who went dancing in New York. And that eventually became John Travolta, of course, and all the young people in that movie. So there you have it, the story of Saturday Night Fever. Incredible story. A lot of money was made out of that movie. Lots and lots of money was made out of that movie. Lots of people danced their lives away, as they say, because of that movie. Saturday Night Fever. Big movie in the late 70s. It all started with this article that I mentioned today. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.